who do not keep silent.
Speaking out the name of Jesus in action and word.
Encouraging and equipping.
Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves.
Do what it says. Do not keep silent.
Well, welcome into this program, everybody. We are glad to have you with us for this interview. I have a wonderful guest in today. His name is Michael Austin, and he's a Christian commentator, but he's with a ministry called Christian History Magazine, and we're going to find out all about that. There's so much information here to discuss. One thing we're going to talk about is debating Darwin, how the church responded to the evolution bombshell. And you can go to their website, ChristianHistoryInstitute.org. That's ChristianHistoryInstitute.org. And Michael, I'd just like to welcome you into the program. Let's just get this started.
Well, thank you for that wonderful introduction. It's good to be with you.
Yes, it's great to have you with us as well. And, you know, for our listeners, if you could just give them a brief background of yourself so they can kind of get to know you, that would be a great place to start.
Well, I'm a relatively new Christian. I've been with the Lord about 10 years.
Okay.
And I have a lot of catching up to do. So this is just a blessing for me to not only talk about Christian history, but also to study Christian history. And to, you know, what I find is how important it is, which should not be a shock, because the Bible arguably is the greatest history book ever written.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm convinced that the Lord wants us to know history because he gave it to us. And so we need to, you know, that has to get your attention.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You know, with this, what gave you the idea to actually start this magazine and get it going?
Well, this magazine was started by Ken Curtis, who was the founder of Vision Video. That's a Christian media and film production company. In fact, he's quite well known in the field. He was a producer of a very famous film, The Cross and the Switchblade.
Oh, yes, yes.
Back in the, I think, late 50s, that movie, or perhaps it was the 60s, that movie was very popular, and it was a crossover film. So both Christian audiences and secular audiences saw that movie. But Ken Curtis had a heart for history and felt that the Christian body just doesn't know a lot about Christian history.
Yes.
And he was, I think, a visionary, a prophet before his time, because now, sadly, the history of the church and what we might consider Christian history has basically been removed from our public education system. So it's very, very important today for families to have a resource like this that they can go to.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll get into that in a quick second here. Friends, Christian History Institute is a nonprofit, it's Pennsylvania Corporation, founded actually in 1982. So you guys have been around a while. And publishers Christian History Magazine, and it also produces books and videos featuring important Christian history, too, including Torchlighters, which I think is great. I didn't even know you guys did that. It's an animated history series for children. And again, please go to ChristianHistoryInstitute.org to find out more information. And I'm totally with you, Michael, that people need to understand that really, in order to move forward, the answers kind of do lie in the past, don't they?
Many do. I think the Bible teaches there's really nothing new.
That's right. Absolutely.
So if we study that that word, then we're going to be well equipped.
Well, let me ask you then. You have a series out in the magazine. Actually, friends, it's issue 107, titled mm-hmm. "Debating Darwin: How the Church Responded to the Evolution Bombshell." Let's just get started, because this is one of my favorite topics of all time. And so, Michael, just get us started. When evolution came onto the scene, how did we as Christians respond?
In many different ways, and not necessarily immediately.
Okay.
Which I think is very appropriate, because when Christians are challenged, when we are challenged, our faith is challenged, I think an appropriate response to that is to be thoughtful and to be patient and to consider what is being proposed. This was not necessarily a new idea. In fact, Charles Darwin's grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, was a proponent of natural selection. The idea of evolution really was not the topic when this first book, The Origin of Species, was introduced. In fact, man was left out of the equation. His theory did not include man in the original book, The Origin of Species. He was talking about plant life and animal life.
Okay. Yes, I would ask with that then. So he saw that is it fair to say that Darwin probably saw there was going to be an issue once it crossed over into humans?
Oh, he did. And it wasn't until about 10 years later that was introduced. The book was latched onto by humanists, primarily, who were looking for this kind of book. We have to remember that the late 1800s, and the book was introduced in 1859, so we're talking about mid-1800s, the world was a very different place. Practically everyone who came into contact with this book, this topic, and Charles Darwin considered themselves to be Christian. It was very rare. In other words, everybody in the universities were considered to be Christians. Most of the universities actually had a litmus test that you had to be a Christian. You had to profess a certain faith, usually of the denomination that the university had been founded by, simply to teach at that university. The worldview of most people on the scene was a biblical worldview. So when I say that this was nothing new, I don't mean to say that this was not radically a new departure from the norm. It was, and it was indeed a bombshell.
Okay, now my question. I have a question for you. You used a word that some of our listeners will be familiar with. Others, though, because just so you know, Michael, we do have a lot of atheists, agnostics listening to the program.
Thankfully.
So, yeah, isn't that awesome? So my question to you is: used a word or a term, biblical worldview. They had a biblical worldview. What do you mean by that?
Well, a biblical worldview is a common term today among Christians. And I appreciate your question, because it's a very important one. Those who adhere to a biblical worldview will be a believer in the creation story of Genesis. Now, when I say that, there's a variety of ways to believe that story. But typically, a biblical worldview would not adhere to the Big Bang chaos theory, that the world that we live in today is simply the result of an explosion. Mm. A biblical worldview will incorporate the idea that the world that we see is so precise, it is so beautifully made, that a creator is implied. It's even demanded. Paul in the Bible, in the New Testament, was very graphic about this. He said, all you need to do is look around to know that this world has been created, and our God is the creator. So that, I hope I'm answering your question.
Oh, you are. You are. Yes, very much.
That would be a biblical worldview, as opposed to a
like a secular humanistic worldview.
Everybody else's worldview would be different.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Now, with that being said, because believe me, I'm loving this. You're doing wonderful. I say that because it's stuff that we just, we study this a lot in this ministry, and mm-hmm. we are glad to know that people like you are out there really trying to advance the cause, if you will. And so we appreciate you very much. And a question I have is, a lot of people will say that, the evolutionary side has science, but this biblical worldview is based in belief. The evolutionary view itself, is that based in science or is that based in belief as well?
Well, I would say it's belief. It's based in, it's a leap of faith.
Okay.
I would also say and challenge your listeners, both believers and non-believers, to look very carefully at what science is discovering on a daily basis about how this world came about, the laws under which it operates, and ask yourself, does this new evidence support a creator, or does it support chaos and an explosion? Because I think you'll find that that as we move forward in science, that the evidence that is coming to us and what we're learning from science, which basically is the practice of observation and documentation, that's really all it is, that the more we know, the more the Big Bang Theory is under question, and the more it seems that the world and the universe is operating on a set of laws that is extremely precise, that could only have come about through a design and a designer.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you with origins itself, whether it was the Big Bang or whether God spoke it into existence. Isn't that outside of science? Is it fair to say? Meaning it's a historical event because it's really not observable. Was that fair?
Well, you make a very good point. The premise of science is that what science can prove must be reproducible. In other words, if you have a theory on how things work, science demands that you are able to reproduce that, and that will prove your theory. Sad to say, for the non-believers, we're not anytime soon expecting to be able to reproduce the occurrence of life or anything that we might equate to evolution, because evolution itself requires millions, if not billions, of years. Everyone who talks about it, is not talking about biblical time. They're talking about time that no one will be able to reproduce.
Yes.
We're not, Darwin's theory remains unproven. I believe it will never be proved. There's no way to ever prove it. And by the way, he started on a premise that human beings were not a part of it. I think he was under the influence of humanists and secularists who took up his work and went far beyond he ever envisioned it going. In fact, he predicted that if certain things were not found and proven, that his theory would have to be reconsidered. And to date, nothing has been ever proved, or what he predicted needed to be shown has not been shown.
Absolutely. You went in a direction I was going to ask a question of, has Darwin's theory been proven? And you were very confident and adamant of it has not been proven. How then can, the local layman, because basically we have been told it's been proven. So help our listeners understand why you're so confident it has not been proven. Dig into that deeper, if you would.
Well, in order for evolution to be proven, we would have to actually reproduce the occurrence of a species. Now, the Bible refers to, that's not a biblical word. That's a word created by a man,
yes,
a scientist, to describe basically what the Bible calls a kind. And what a kind is the male and the female can get together and reproduce their own kind. Now, that is loosely to the layman, that is what is referred to as a species. So for evolution to be proven, we would have to actually demonstrate, science would have to demonstrate that two members of a kind would actually produce not their own kind, but a different kind, a different species, one species moving into a different species. That's what evolution proposes, and that's what's not been proven. That's what the believer would not accept, because in the beginning, God created the kinds. And it's very detailed, very explicit in Genesis, that he made the fish, he made the cattle, he made these various kinds, and he made man. Nowhere does it say he made something that's going to turn into something else.
We're going to keep that interview going here in a little bit, friend. I hope you are getting a lot of information here, and just excited to have you with us. You can go find us online at worldviewwarriors.org. That's worldviewwarriors.org. We'll be right back with more with Michael Austin right after this.
Control Energy Drink.
With your host,
Jason Dzurek.
Friends, if a bird develops a sharper beak, it's still a bird. And if a moth develops a different color scheme on its wings, it's still a moth. Creationists do not deny this at all. But the Darwinist is generally talking of an innumerable amount of change from the very first single living thing into all the 300 million plus known species of organisms on the planet. Creationists refer to this as molecules to man evolution. And evolutionists generally use information that suggests organisms can change slightly over time and then make this giant leap to say this shows large changes will take place. Friends, unless you have a time machine, past events cannot be observed.
Find us online
at worldviewwarriors.org.
Not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves.
Do what it says. Do not keep silent.
We are sitting down here with Michael Austin. Very much encourage you to go to the website ChristianHistoryInstitute.org. We are discussing, obviously, about Darwin, but they have an issue 107, which is titled Debating Darwin, How the Church Responded to the Evolution Bombshell. We are discussing that right now. Again, the website you can go to, ChristianHistoryInstitute.org, and their Christian History Magazine is also one you can get too. With this, Michael, let's keep moving forward a little bit. Do all scientists believe in evolution?
Oh, no. No, not by any means.
Okay.
There are many scientists. Of course, we don't hear about these scientists because, sadly, I think the media has another agenda. But there are many scientists who accept Genesis. If your listeners want to investigate that, I would search the word creationist. And there are many scientists holding the top degrees, teaching in the top university. Well, not so much teaching in the top universities, because this has become kind of a litmus test in most universities that you must adhere to evolution. So you may not find them in certain universities, but working in the science field, yes. And by the way, I've yet to meet a doctor, a medical doctor, or anybody that works in a hospital that is not questioning the model of the secular model of human beings, how they work, and what happens with them. Most of them will tell you, you know, there's something special going on here. We don't know what it is, but I think the Lord intervenes on occasion.
Okay, so with that, why do you think that is, that they, I don't want to say completely reject, but reject this evolutionary model? What are some, I guess, evidences that make them question it?
Well, evolution, you know, essentially requires certain tests in order to be a proven theory. And no one sees this. No one sees this kind of transition from one species to another. So it remains debatable. Now, what a lot of people, I think, resist, if you will, mm-hmm. or object to, is that the field of biology, for the most part, the field of paleontology, for the most part, these scientific disciplines are now teaching this as fact in the university. That's unfortunate, because if you're teaching something that is fact, you're subjecting yourself to criticism at the very least, and you're restricting your ability to truly maintain the stipulations or the conditions under which science should operate. It's a bit akin to science at one time in Galileo's time, taking as fact that we lived on a flat Earth. He had a different opinion, and he suffered greatly because of that. Because and sadly, it was the church that persecuted him, because they refused to be open to this new idea. But like I mentioned before, when Christians, when our faith is challenged, when the prevailing opinion or alleged truth out there is challenged, a Christian really should take pause, have some patience with that, look at it closely, compare it to the living spirit within them.
Yes.
Go to the Lord, put it before the Lord, and seek our answers there, as opposed to the prevailing opinion.
I really appreciate that very much. And I want to keep moving forward, Michael, because I'd like to ask you one last thing regarding history, and then let's talk a little bit more about just Christian History Institute magazine, okay?
You bet.
All right. So my question is, and, we could do probably a two-hour show on this next question, just so you know. The Scopes trial, this was a major turning point in, I will say, the United States history. Can you help people understand what is the Scopes trial and what was that about?
Okay. Very, very interesting trial and very revealing and interesting historical moment. It took place, by the way, in 1925. So we're talking 75 years after the book Origin of Species came out.
Okay.
So lots of water over the dam, let's say. The debate had been thoroughly discussed, and what the issue was the teaching of evolution in the public school system. The reality was that many schools and many institutions of higher learning had by that time accepted the idea of evolution. Now, it wasn't quite as thoroughly accepted as it would be today, but it was pretty much generally accepted. And the issue that came out of the trial, not the issue of the trial itself, because that's fairly cut and dried, and I can speak about that, but the result of the trial was to basically establish that the dialogue, the debate, if you will, was established, that the lines of argument were pretty well defined, and you had people on one side who had a biblical worldview and people on the other side who had a secular worldview, and there was no agreement between the two. And it was a very, very contentious argument. It riled up a lot of people. And the outcome, I would say that it was it furthered the cause of the secular humanist position, which was basically that we can set aside this foolishness about miracles and God and all of this the silly notion that we highly educated people can put behind us and move forward with the progress of man's endeavor and man's knowledge and man's thought.
And friends, we're going to just have to end the interview right there. And you can find that interview actually at worldviewwarriors.org on the podcast tab. The reason for that is just due to time. We're going to have to cut that short. And I want to share with you a little bit from our blog post from Steve Reisner. The main reason is because it's, again, kind of talking about this as far as evolution and what evolutionists do. You know, you may see this tactic being done even by some Christians as well. I would hope not. But Steve Reisner has written something called Elephant Hurling. And again, you can find this at worldviewwarriors.org. He's one of our blog writers. A major problem for evolution is there isn't a single indisputable transitional fossil when the record should be full of them. It was said that evolution is obvious in fossils. This tactic is known as elephant hurling, and it is completely false. The trouble for the evolutionist is that the hundreds of millions, if not billions, of fossils that we have found, there is not a single fossil anyone can say for sure is slowly changing into a different type of organism. Most alleged missing links are later to be found false. The best contenders are made from a piece of jaw, a rib, and a leg bone found in the same 10 acres of ground at varying depths, which means, you know, in different heights, if you will, in the ground. Darwin even said the fossil record was the most powerful evidence against his theory, and he believed in time it would reveal the evidence he needed. Over 150 years later, we're still looking for a single piece of evidence in the fossil record, friends. Now, some evolutionists will say, quote, well, not quote, but they'll just say every fossil is a transitional fossil, which apparently is supposed to make this catastrophic problem go away. But does it really? When we find a rabbit in the fossil record, we know it's a rabbit. When we find a bird, we're pretty sure it's a bird. If it's a fish that's found, well, no one disputes that is a fish. Friends, you can find out more about our ministry at worldviewwarriors.org. That's worldviewwarriors.org. Go read Elephant Hurling by Steve Reisner on our blog site. And then you can also find us on Facebook and all over the place. Do not keep silent and find Worldview Warriors as well. We thank you for listening, friends. You have a great evening and a great day. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Do Not Keep Silent. Find us online
at worldviewwarriors.org.